Blog Talk Radio.
It's almost time.
You right there with the pretzel. Time to sit down.
Who's, man?
Yeah.
Hey, you going to the concessions then? You going to the bathroom? Come back. The show's about to start.
Got my boys. We out here ready. We about to be some high-flying, high-slamming, slammer-jammer, three-point shooting between the legs, behind your back, through your legs, on your neck. Hey, everybody, you guys are getting your seats. I'm singing the national anthem.
Ready.
It's time to... I put it down the babies, put down the pepperoni.
Let's go!
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, game time!
Hey, welcome to another Fans Coach Fan Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, M.H. Scott, and as always, promise you another wonderful show. As always, you know, I like to start out with a little bit of my man, Mr. Keith Wright, and talk about that college experience.
Who up a student of the game? Had people front and talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-Ball would do the same. I can't complain the situation that I'm in. Meeting different connects that turn out to be my friends. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen. But I'm hating then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart cool. That's how I do.
I'm going to say he's making smart cool. He's making smart cool. Well, we initially had a show scheduled this evening for you on, wanted to talk to some folks about some new technology that has hit. But we're going to postpone that show, and we're going to come on and do something slightly different for you this time. But until then, we'll be right back.
Finally tonight, college athletics and the money involved in big-time sports comes under fire. Hari Srinivasan has the story.
Taylor Branch is the author of The Atlantic Story, which is on newsstands now and will be released as an e-book later this week, and he joins me now to talk about all this. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Hari.
So first, help us understand what you think the essential problem with big-time college sports is today.
The essential problem is that we pretend that these adults are not entitled to a portion of the value that they earn. And we pretend that the problem with all of these scandals is that dirty athletes are getting money under the table. The problem is that we're not honest about it. Nowhere else in America do we forbid adults from seeking a portion of the highly valued services that they provide. And nowhere else would we think of saying, don't pay these people until I'm satisfied that it won't mess something up.
Now, as the NCAA president said, they're getting an education, some to schools that they may never have had access to. Isn't that payment enough?
They're generating billions of dollars on top of those scholarships, and we're saying that they should be amateurs. We don't tell anybody else. Amateurism it's like religion or idealism. It's something that one professes. It's not something you impose on someone else.
Now, you don't buy the idea.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what happened, but we're going to go back to the show and pick it up from the beginning.
Finally tonight, college athletics and the money involved in big-time sports comes under fire. Hari Srinivasan has the story.
Taylor Branch is the author of The Atlantic Story, which is on newsstands now and will be released as an e-book later this week, and he joins me now to talk about all this. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Hari.
So first, help us understand what you think the essential problem with big-time college sports is today.
The essential problem is that we pretend that these adults are not entitled to a portion of the value that they earn. and we pretend that the problem with all of these scandals is that dirty athletes are getting money under the table. The problem is that we're not honest about it. Nowhere else in America do we forbid adults from seeking a portion of the highly valued services that they provide. And nowhere else would we think of saying, don't pay these people until I'm satisfied that it won't mess something up.
Now, as the NCAA president said, they're getting an education, some to schools that they may never have had access to. Isn't that payment enough?
They're generating billions of dollars on top of those scholarships. And we're saying that they should be amateurs. We don't tell anybody else. Amateurism it's like religion or idealism. It's something that one professes. It's not something you impose on someone else.
Now, you don't buy the idea.
Glenn, he's CEO of Entertainment and Sports Plus, which is a Southern California-based athlete and entertainment management firm with offices in Atlanta, Cleveland, Ohio. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you for having me here.
I'm so happy to have you here. Now, I know that there is an overall business of sports and how there's a system that has failed a lot of the young men who produce over $300 billion in revenue annually. Can you talk about that?
You're right. The revenue, according to the Sports Industry News, is approximately $300 billion a year, and 80% of those players who generate that revenue, according to league sources, in football are bankrupt within 2 years.
Okay, I'm not sure what's going on with my audio tracks today. They seem to play momentarily, and then all of a sudden they shut
55
down.
55 teams, the tournament is the chance of a lifetime. A few may actually go on to the NBA. But could these college athletes really just be victims of outrageous exploitation? We're bringing that question out in the open tonight. And my next guest compares the NCAA to a pimp. College sports is a billion-dollar industry. Coaches are paid millions, but the players earn nothing. And he says that has cost America's black community $250 billion dollars over 40 years. Joining me now, Boyce Watkins, a finance professor.
Well, we're going to hold off on that piece for right now, and because that piece just seems to be something that's going to take us in an altogether different direction. But one thing I did want to announce, on July 22nd, we will be introducing a new component to the Parents Coach Parents Network, stepping into, and I apologize because the young lady, if she's listening, she may get upset with me because I'm messing up the title of the show that she's going to be doing. We have a young lady that has an organization called Solo Mommy. And Solo Mommy basically talks about issues that single mothers experience. And the young lady that's going to be joining us, here on the Parents Coach Parents Network, and bringing up one of her programs will be focusing on a benefit that a lot of single parents have experienced. So on that note, we hope that she has a successful show, and the show, like I said, will start on July 22nd, and we'll move her in on a Tuesday, and hopefully it will turn out to be a great success. So I'm going to try to upload another piece I like for you to hear and just listen to it. It was talking about college coaches and academics. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it a couple weeks ago on Outside the Lines, but I found this piece as a podcast and decided I'd share with everyone today, because there's been a number of things that's been going on that I've been really, 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 really truly concerned about. And definitely somewhere along the line, we're going to have to make some changes or do some adjustments or something to get our kids on track. You know, I think about some of the things that, you know, we've talked about over the last couple of weeks. You know, we talked about the SAT course. We talked about last week we had a great show talking about AAU, and I thought that really sparked a nerve in quite a few folks. So as a result, I really appreciated that, you know, everybody was able to call in, everybody was able to provide their input, and hopefully the show continues to go and grow in that direction, and, you know, folks get something out of it each and every week without a doubt. And whenever I get to a point where you're not getting something out of it one of our listeners, then I definitely like for you to let me know, and we will definitely try to make some changes and some adjustments to the show. But, you know, I'm going to step to the side for a second and talk a little bit about Decision 2.0, as folks like to title it. The decision that LeBron James made and the whole free agency issue that took place just this week. You know, that was a very huge move, as I see it, from, in the world of NBA basketball. And what I mean by that is that young man and his staff and, you know, folks that he has around him have orchestrated a way to capture the entire attention of the NBA, and teams were afraid to move and make decisions based upon, you know, trying to figure out where he was going to go and what he was going to do. And that was a very huge power play that shows that those players have those players have the power that they think they have. If and when they ever decide to try to exercise it, you know, follow up with that situation and the situation, you know, with Carmelo is equally important, but it just didn't get the same media coverage. You know, just as we've seen the media coverage for LeBron, we could have seen the same type of media coverage for the situation with Carmelo, if they really and truly wanted to publicize that as much. They took an entire free agency move or free agency conversation and came up with speculation after speculation after speculation. And I say speculation after speculation because the simple fact that there wasn't anyone from LeBron's camp or organization reporting anything or divulging any information to anyone out there to let you know that he was going to make this decision. You know, only thing that we was getting and was being reported was that he was meeting with, you know, certain folks at certain times, or representatives from his organization was meeting with certain folks at certain times. It was no indication or no subtle hint that, he may be going to Cleveland, or he may be staying in Miami, or, you know, he may decide to try to go somewhere else. I don't recall any of that, and I've thoroughly watched and kept track of what was going on in sports media, and that part was always left out. But listening to our fine reporters that like to give us that insight and give us that scoop, you know, they kept you on your edge, kept you on your toes, basically letting you know that there's a possibility he may be going to Cleveland, or there's a possibility that he may even decide to join Kobe out in Los Angeles, you know. But no, he may not want to do that, because if he joins Kobe out in Los Angeles, then he can't continue to chase Kobe and rings, because now Kobe has got another ring, you know. So it was all part of the game to keep you entertained, folks, to keep you on the edge, to keep you intrigued by what was going to happen next. Meanwhile, there was other young men out there making moves, other young men out there doing some great things, you know, to include Carmelo and some of the other guys that, you know, was involved in this free agency shuffle. But it sent a message to the owners of the NBA that this is possible. You know, if you think back a couple of years ago when a similar move was taking place, or they were trying to figure out something, then they definitely tried to shut Carmelo down from making a move that he wanted to make a move on. But not Carmelo, excuse me, Chris Paul shut him down on a move that he wanted to make. But as you see, you know, things worked out for him, and hopefully will continue to work out. And, you know, as these guys learn and understand the power and the leverage that they have, you know, it may make for a better situation for them, and a lot of them may get a better understanding of their power and their ability to leverage things and make things happen in the best interest of everybody. And when they're able to do that, then they make it a better picture for the entire league and for every player out there. And I say that, and I look at that, and I think about that, because of the simple fact that, you know, so many of them fall into the situation where they go broke, and they go broke based upon what? Based upon a lot of the drama, a lot of the issues, a lot of the heartburns that they experience, you know, just a lack of knowledge, drama, issue, heartburn, a lot of that they experience as young men, and then they, you know, once they become these superstars, they try to, or become these, you know, high-paid athletes, then they try to step out of that box without having the knowledge and the foundation and a solid background on how to handle all that. So let's get back to something I was talking about a second ago. Let's go back to college and athletics and college coaches. I want to share this piece with you that I heard on ESPN, Outside the Line, and if I can get this piece here to play, then I'm going to let this play for the next few minutes. So give us a call if you have any questions at 917-889-8095, 917-889-8095. Love to hear from you. Well, I'm hoping that my audio track, hopefully I'm not experiencing any technical difficulty. I think it may have had a little 30-second delay, but it should be coming up here within the next 5 seconds. Let's see if we can get a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 countdown. Let's see if it comes up for him. Not sure exactly what's going on here. I know it was processed. Okay, well, I'll stop that for a second here. And well, I seem to be having some kind of difficulty with my audio tracks here today. I'm not sure exactly what's going on with them. So if anything's going to play up. There's too many things trying to play at the same time, so something seems to be wrong here. Not sure exactly where the issue is, but what I was trying to do, I was just trying to play a little audio piece from you that, like I said, I heard on Outside the Lines as college coach was talking about, you know, their experience and talking about, you know, some of the things that, I think it was a piece on North Carolina, that academic challenge that they're having at North Carolina. Well, I don't see any of my audio tracks pulling up today, and I'm not sure exactly what's going on with that. But all in all, I think we definitely have enough information to talk about some things. I just recently finished working on a paper for one of the classes that I'm currently in, and yes, I am in class and, you know, trying to get a better understanding for the sports industry, and that way I'm better and able to help and support other young men as they come along and, you know, need that attentive ear or need someone to reach out to. No, I'm not trying to become a sports agent. I'm not trying to become a sports manager or anything of the sort. You know, I want to be someone that's slightly outside of all of those boxes, something along the lines of a consultant, someone that can provide insight and guidance and direction to some of our young men in the sports industry. But like I was saying, I was just recently working on a paper that talks about, you know, the role and responsibilities of a general manager in this. You know, talks about a whole lot of things that the general manager is involved in. You know, as he's involved in the budget, he's involved in, you know, the deals going on at the draft. He's involved in trades. He's involved in, you know, making sure that the team is getting the best out of the marketing and media situation. You know, if they're, you know, out there and they're trying to make sure that they promote the team in a proper fashion. So they're doing a number of things to make sure, you know, that the team is getting the best out of everything that they do. I'm going to pause for a second, so you may hear a slight delay, but I will be right back.
Every year, pick a number, for the last 10 years, they've tried to move basketball, football coaches away from the academic side. In the old days, I may know some of the professors. Now they tell you, if you see a professor come and turn around and run the other direction, because they don't want you to have contact, because in some ways that will be perceived as a negative, which I disagree with. I think that I would have a great relationship with faculty members, but that's the way the NCAA has moved.
College basketball coaches are held accountable for the grade point averages, the academic progress, and graduation rates of their players. But some say they are not encouraged to interact with the faculty. The contradiction of being judged by wins and losses, as well as academics in an era where they are told to keep their distance from the scholastic side of campus. A discussion and a debate today, Outside the Lines.
And now, sitting in for Bob Lee, Andy Katz.
Coaches are in a tricky predicament. They are hired to win first and run an NCAA clean program, and they are held responsible for the academics of their players, the majority of which at major programs chose the school and coach because of the basketball program more than the academic profile of the school. Yet if there is any unethical behavior on the academic side of the school, as alleged by 2005 North Carolina national champion Rashad McCants, then the head coach can be held responsible or be forced to defend himself against inflammatory charges.
I didn't write any papers, but I know that the tutors did help guys write papers as far as help them through the grammar, the structure, paragraphs, so on and so forth. But for some of the premier players, we didn't write our papers.
I don't select classes. I don't sit down with the player and say, well, this class is this and this class is that, because I don't have that knowledge. We have a very defined system here at the University of North Carolina. I have somewhat control over the basketball program. I don't have control over the academic side.
You're not there to get an education. You're there to make revenue for the college. You're there to put fans in the seats. You're there to bring prestige to the university by winning games.
Let's discuss this ongoing dilemma facing college coaches on how much they should or can get involved in academics when they are held accountable to the actions of their players in and out of the classroom. Joining me now, Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo, Fresno State head coach Rodney Terry, Arizona State head coach Herb Sendek, and ESPN college basketball analyst Seth Greenberg, a former head coach of Virginia Tech, South Florida, and Long Beach State. Seth, I want to start with you first. You're out of coaching now for a couple of years. What should be the responsibilities for a head coach and academics?
I think a head coach's responsibility is to make sure that student athlete doesn't lose track of their academic objectives once they get on campus. Now, coaches are going to graduate every young player that wants to get a degree. Rashad McCants obviously did not want to get educated. He chose not to be educated. But at the schools I've worked at, a couple things. One, I agree with Roy Williams and SBF. You are not allowed to talk to professors. You're not allowed to talk to learning specialists, and you're not allowed to talk to tutors. But what you can do is meet with your academic advisors. I met every single Monday at 10 o'clock with Katie Ammons, my academic advisor at Virginia Tech, and we went over each and every player in every class, what they had done in the past week, what they had to do moving forward, to make sure that I understood what was going on, so that when we were in practice, I could ask a kid, hey, you got a test coming up. Are you ready? Are you using the study hall? Are you taking advantage of the tutors? The thing that's kind of a slippery slope, Andy, is that, again, there are two types of tutors. There are facilitators and there are enablers, just like there are two types of coaches. The best tutors are facilitators. They teach those young people how to learn. The enablers, that is dangerous. Those are rogue tutors. That's maybe the problem that maybe some institutions have. And as a head coach, you have no control over that because you're not allowed to communicate with those people.
Seth, you say that. Roy Williams said that. Tom, you were shaking your head. But according to the NCAA, there's no rule that you cannot call a professor. So why can't you talk to a member of the faculty?
Well, when I was a GA here, you know, 30 years ago, 28, 9 years ago, I was the academic person, so it was great. I got to get relationships, and it's all about relationships and accountability. Had relationships with profs. I worked for a guy that if I called a prof and he said that they're missing classes, they were in more trouble when they got back here. You know, it's such a, you know, Seth calls it a slippery slope. I call it confusing. We're supposed to have all this ability to handle things and all this, I guess, pressure on us to graduate players, hold them actually to a higher standard than the university does because of progress towards degree and that. So when they talk about being able to take just any classes, I don't know what it's like other places, but here at Michigan State, it's so regimented, you have to navigate. We have a great guy. Jim does an incredible job here for us in our Smith Center, but he answers to the provost. And I think it helps widen the gap between athletics and academics. And to be honest with you, it disappoints me thoroughly.
Tom, you said as a GA 30 years ago, you talked to professors. How often have you talked to a professor now?
If I see him on the street or at the grocery store, you know, otherwise I'm afraid to. And that sounds a little ridiculous and with a little venom to it, but I'm telling you the truth that, you know, I do not like the way we've done it, personally. I think here at Michigan State, the better relationship I had with a prof or a player or a parent, more things are going to get done. And I just can't see myself doing it, strong-arming a prof, number one, or a prof taking my strong arm, number two. So I don't understand that. It's and you talk about the tutors that Seth did. Those are the same tutors that are tutoring other students that are in the same kind of classes. So I think sometimes we get a bad rap, and these rules are made for 10% of the problems or the coaches or players and not 90%, because I think 90% of them are doing one heck of a job.
Rodney, you just got a contract extension, and in the contract, you have incentives if you are at a certain grade point average your team is, APR score, grad rate. So if you have those incentives in your contract, why can't you be more involved in the academic side of your players?
Well, I think it's a fine line, Andy. I think obviously we stress and place a high emphasis on guys getting an education and guys coming to our institution with the intentions of graduating. We have, you know, really good academic advisor on campus, and again, we don't have contact with professors on our campus as well. But I think it's a huge responsibility and a lot of accountability with your staff, you know, and tracking what your guys are doing academically. I know Seth talked about meeting once a week. We meet once a week, I think, which also helps us get organized for the week, understand what guys have on their schedules right now, what type of tests they're taking. But I think, again, if you place the emphasis on the student first and not so much about, you know, what you have in your contract as a bonus in terms of academic success, and you focus on the individual, everything else kind of takes care of itself.
Herb, you've been at a couple of different kinds of institutions, Miami of Ohio, private school, or at least a school where certainly it's looked at more as an academic institution. Now, in the past two jobs, you've been at large state universities, NC State, and now Arizona State. How has it changed for you in terms of your relationship to the academic side of campus?
It really hasn't. You know, I think our job starts with providing standards and expectations for the men in our program. So, for example, when we first started here at Arizona State, during the spring, we had a team that was underperforming academically. So it was my decision as the head coach to lock the doors to the gymnasium, increase study table hours, to send a message that academics are important to our program, and more importantly than that, help the young men finish as strong as possible.
Seth, you brought up that you met weekly with your players to find out their grades. How often do you think that occurs where the head coach is that in tune, from what you said, as to exactly what courses their players are taking and when they have exams or maybe papers due?
I can't speak for anyone else, but I would think that on most universities, the head coach is involved. I mean, you're going into the living room of this young person, and you're telling them, all right, what are your goals? And every single kid you recruit tells you, you know what? They want to graduate. And I used to talk to the kids about looking down a tunnel. Well, if you want to graduate, you got to class on time, you worked with your tutors, all right, you did your assignments, you were accountable for what you were supposed to do. And to me, if it's important to you, it's going to be important to your players. To me, if rebounding is important to you and you hammer that each and every day, you know what? Your team's going to probably be a pretty good rebounding team. Well, if you're involved in the academic well-being for your student-athletes, if you're involved on a daily basis, when they come to the gym and say, you had a SOCH test the other day, how did it go? If those players know that you're on top of it, they're going to be on top of it most times. The problem we have is sometimes a young player's academics are more important to the coaches than they are to the players, and not because of bonuses, because at that stage of their lives, all they're thinking about is getting to the league. That's the reality that we live in. When you hear Rashad McCants talk about, well, I was there to make money, no, you weren't. All right? Roy Williams didn't want you to make money. He wanted you to be the best player you could be, win as many games as we can win, and do the right thing. Now, you chose to go in a different path, but I would say most of the coaches in college basketball are involved with their players academically, and it's a point of emphasis. If you lose track of it, they will lose track of it. You know, to me, again, Andy, it comes down to the environment that you create within your program. And, you know, to me, if a young person goes to college and they embrace the opportunity to get an education, to be educated, to learn how to learn, they're going to be better off for it. And I think most coaches emphasize that.
Tom, you've had a lot of four-year players at Michigan State. When you are recruiting them in their home, how much does academics come up?
Well, it comes up a lot. I mean, you know, it's to be honest with you, I think the moms are always more interested in the academics. The dads are a lot of times more interested in the play. But moms rule in a lot of things, so that is a very important part. And yet, Judd Heathcote used to say something to me, and I agree. You know, we can't make a kid graduate. I mean, you know, we're trying to get a kid graduated in 4 years, and yet play on the road weeknights, miss a lot of school. Unlike football that leaves Friday night and comes back Saturday night, we're not only missing a lot of school, we're getting back at 2, 3 in the morning, and it's difficult. And yet the standards we're held by are tougher than what a normal student would go through here. And so I think there's a perception out there that athletes just get to skate through. And again, like Seth says a lot of times, and I'm sure the other guys are saying, I don't know what it's like at every school, but I know what it's like at most Big Ten schools. And I'll guarantee you, it's not run that way. I mean, we're having them go to summer school. I don't think that's fair. I don't think a kid should have to go to summer school, year-round school. I think that's why we burn our kids out. But you got to do that to graduate them, and every coach is so fearful of all the different rules and where a coach can go and whether his scores travel with them. And the bottom line is what Seth said. The bottom line is you got to convince a kid, or Herb might have said it, that academics is important to me and my staff. And if it's important to us, then we got to make sure the parents know that, and we got to make sure the player knows that. But it's a little bit more difficult than people think, and perception becomes the rule, and it's not always, perception is not always correct in this case.
Seth, hold on there. I want to bring in Pitt head coach Jamie Dixon, who's now joining us, and we've referenced off the top what Roy Williams said earlier in an interview I did with him back in January about how we've moved to a different era where college basketball coaches are not supposed to talk to the faculty. Why is there such a lack of trust with a head coach talking to a member of the faculty, Jamie?
I don't think it's a lack of trust. I think it's just the proper way of doing things. I think you have experts in our situation. Our provost hires our academic support system. They work for our academic advisor works for the provost's office, and their job and their expertise is in that area. And we're there to provide the discipline. If our guys aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing academically, we hold them out of practice. We hold them out of games, and usually just keep them out of practice or workouts is enough. And but that's, I think, the way that things should be done. I don't think it's a lack of trust. I think there's a lot of trust within our athletic department and all athletic departments.
But Jamie, you and all these other coaches,
Andy, can I say?
Yes, jump in.
I don't mean to disagree, but I totally disagree with that. I think there's no relationship. How can you trust somebody you don't have a relationship with? You can hardly get a relationship with a professor. And if you can't get a relationship, I wouldn't trust anybody. If I was a player and he couldn't go in the head coach's office and talk to him, why would they trust each other? And worse, I am an educator. My degree's in education. And so that bothers me that we do not get the opportunity, because I'm a professor in my own right, too. I'm a teacher in my own right, too. And I just think because we don't have relationships, there is a lack of trust and a lack of accountability. And as much as I respect Jamie, I do not agree that everybody trusts everybody. In fact, I think coaches are not trusted, and that kind of bothers me personally.
Jamie, you want to respond?
Well, I think that they have a relationship with the advisors, the academic advisors, who work for our provost office, and so they're best at that. But as far as trust, I think the trust is amongst those, the academic advisor and the provost and the professors, and trying to get in the middle of that, you know, may bother some. But I think it's the best way of doing it. So that's what we've done, and it's been successful as far as our results. But, you know, there's different ways of doing things, and there are times where I guess coaches are not trusted, but, you know, that we can't cover for every coach.
Ronnie, you guys are held responsible for these grade point averages. The NCAA posts your APR scores, and I should note that yours at Fresno State has moved up the last 3 years. The other three, four of the last 7 years, they've had a thousand percentage on the APR, according to the NCAA. So if your stats are put out there by the NCAA, why can't you be more directly involved in the academics, Rodney?
Well, I think it's such a fine line in terms of obviously, it's being published there, and it's public news in terms of what your scores are. But again, I think it just gets back again to the whole accountability piece and what you stress and what's important in your program. You know, we go into a kid's home and we talk about academics, we talk about the importance of an education, we talk about wanting to graduate. And again, like was said earlier by Coach Sendek, you know, it's going to be what you place on in terms of the kids also responding to that. But if there's a high emphasis on it, I think kids want to buy into structure. We use the honor system as well, where you hold kids accountable, where they've got to sign in every day. And so much of what we're talking about is communication or lack of communication in terms of trusting in the area of academics.
Herb, how often do you hear from a parent about their son's academic situation on campus?
Not that often. And in many cases, we try to be proactive and give them information in a timely manner so they're not surprised at the end of the semester. But it's rare when we have to reach out to a parent because their son isn't meeting expectations. Obviously, when we do have those occurrences, you know, we will reach out, and you know, we'll try to work together to get that young person doing the right things.
Seth, you've been shaking your head here.
It's interesting because during the recruiting process, parents are very interested in academics. That's the first question they're going to ask. They're going to want to meet with the academic counselors. Once that player gets on campus, parents are interested in two things: playing time and role. That's the reality. Very rare in all my time at Virginia Tech, maybe once or twice in South Florida, did I ever get a phone call from a parent about academics. Now, we kept them informed. We had a newsletter that went out every month. We sent them their syllabus and their academic schedules, their weekly schedules each and every week. But the reality is, once a player gets on campus, in the culture of college basketball today, parents are interested. Yeah, they would like for their son to get a degree, but parents are interested in playing time and role. Guys don't transfer academics. They transfer for playing time and role. That's it.
Tom, how much are college athletics right now a business or feeder for the pros versus an educational endeavor?
Well, unfortunately, I think we're becoming a business more and more and more, and I understand the whole process. But, you know, one thing we are getting away from a little bit here, and it sounds like all of us has had a lot of success academically. Now, I think we beat on it. We push it. I know some of these guys really personally, and I know that it matters to them. And I think there's more kids that are very good, too. What I don't like is if that academic thing went wrong, are they calling the provost? Are they calling the tutor? Are they calling out the coach? And if I'm going to be responsible to get blamed for something, I'd like to have the ability to do something about it. And that's the difficult part I have with this whole thing. And, you know, I still feel like personally that coaches don't get trusted enough. I understand because there's been some problems. But there's a lot of good things going on, too. And I know here at Michigan State, Jim Pignatero, my AD, Mark Hollis, my president, Luana Simon, who was our provost for 25 years or more, you know, we do work together, but I'm still against not being able to talk to a prof because I think most of those profs appreciate. I always tell them, I can't talk to you, but if you want to call me on somebody, we'll get it straightened out. And that's happened because I've been here long enough, and it's actually a fun process.
Jamie, you've been nodding your head. What about the fact that
I agree with you, could
be accused or sort of, you know, they could certainly call you out if you have a player that's ineligible?
Well, I think as we're part of a team, just like we talked about roles, there's a role in academics as well, and everybody has theirs. Ours is to create a culture of striving to do the best they've ever done academically. We have a team goal of getting a 3.0 GPA, and we'll get the team together. And if we didn't get it, and if there's one guy that didn't get it done, and that's the reason why we get there, we put that guy's grades out there in front of the whole team. It's just like if they missed a block out or didn't get back on defense. So the peer pressure has been the best thing for us. I mean, our guys don't want to be the guy that kept us from being a 3.0, and that's been the best thing. But we all have roles, and yeah, we'd love to. There's a lot of things we'd love to do, but calling a professor is just not one of them. And as Tom said, it is great when a professor does call us and let us know when a kid does well, because we get a lot of those calls also. But also when a kid doesn't, I would like that. But at the same time, we just can't reach out to a professor because of what it could entail or what how somebody could take it. And that's just the way it is. Some things you got to live with. And we all have our roles in basketball on a team, but we also have our roles in helping these kids graduate and doing it. And ours is to provide discipline and a culture to be successful and to strive to graduate and have a team GPA of 3.0.
Tom Izzo, Jamie Dixon, Rodney Terry, Herb Sendick, Seth Greenberg, thanks for joining us on this topic here on Outside the Lines. And as always, you can continue the conversation on our Facebook page. You can follow the show.
Well, you know, that was a great piece by Outside the Lines, and I agree with the conversation that the gentleman was sharing with that the coaches were sharing with each one of us as parents. But I did have a problem, and I hope many of you parents also had a problem with the statement that I heard in reference to parents are only interested in our children's grades when that coach is sitting in our living room. And thereafter, we're more concerned with playing time and the role that he or she is playing. You know, that personally to me is very offensive because I'm interested in my child's grades from the first day on campus all the way up until the last day when he walked across the stage, you know, and received his diploma. So received his degree. So, you know, I'm that's just me, and I hope that every other parent out there is feeling the same exact way. You know, I played that little piece from Outside the Lines, and just to let you know that some of the conversations, if you didn't have a chance to listen to it that day, it's a free and open podcast, so I feel as though I hope I haven't violated any copyright laws or rules or anything like that. I haven't done any editing to it. I just played the exact same podcast that was posted on the website, and I would hope that I didn't offend anybody or ESPN or anything to that nature. But again, parents, we need to be in tune. We need to know what's being said about us as parents of these student athletes, of these young athletes that's trying to fulfill and live their dreams. You know, their dreams of being able to play at the high school level, at the middle school level, at the high school level, at the collegiate level, and if at all possible, that 1 to 2% that gets a chance to play at the professional level. You know, so it's a beautiful thing just to watch our children fulfill their dreams and, you know, reach that day that they're on the stage at the college level and playing the game that they've loved and played for all these years. We here at the Parents Coach Parents Network is here to serve you, here to provide you with a service, provide you with a support system just to kind of sort of guide you and, you know, just help you out, or if you need somebody to just simply give you a piece of advice or sit down and listen to a situation or give you some insight of something that they have experienced. That's what we do here at the Parents Coach Parents Network. You know, I had the wonderful pleasure, if you had a chance to catch us on Facebook, I had the wonderful pleasure to meet a couple other past weekend at Mike Tomlin, Coach Mike Tomlin, head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He had a tailgate event, and I had the pleasure of attending and had the opportunity to meet a number of wonderful parents at that event. Met Mrs. Webb, Avis Webb, excuse me, Mrs. Avis Webb. She is the mother of B.W. Webb for the Dallas Cowboys. I had a chance to meet Sister Brown, and I forgot her first name. Apologize for that, sister, if you're listening to the show. But she is the mother of Elton Brown, former NFL standout, and also had a chance to briefly talk with Coach Tomlin and E.J. Manuel's dad, and I apologize for not recalling his name, and being able to provide more information about him. But definitely, I plan to stay in touch with those folks, and we plan to provide service and support to everyone that's out there in order to make sure that, and that's Robin Brown, and make sure that everyone is getting the best out of every situation they possibly can if their child is involved in sports. So this has been M.H. Scott, your host of the Parents Network. Again, look for a special show that we'll be doing Wednesday at 7:30. This coming Wednesday at 7:30, it will be a show that will focus around brain sensory sensor. And that brain sensory sensor, well, I'm not going to say nothing about it. I want you to tune into that show. I will be promoting that show, and you will have plenty of opportunity to call in and talk to some folks that's involved in that piece of technology that has come about to give us a little bit more insight on what's going on, you know, the possibility of our children getting through these concussion situations. And, you know, when the helmet receives a certain amount of shock, you know, what happens from that point. Again, this is M.H. Scott, the host of the Parents Coach and Parents Network. You can follow us on Twitter at PCPHR. No, follow us on Twitter, PCP Network, or Instagram at PCP Network. You can also see us on Facebook at the Parents Coach and Parents Network. And at any time you need to reach out to us, send us an email at PCPHR@AOL.com. Well, as always, I'd like to close up with my man, Mr. Keith Wright, and thanks for joining us this evening, and we'll see you hopefully on Wednesday for that special show.
Student of the game, had people frontin' talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I know I would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-Ball would do the same. I can't complain, the situation that I'm in, meeting different connects that turn out to be my friends. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen, but I'm hating then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and the knowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart moves. That's how I do.